Hi there, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, giving you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And my friends, information. Information is key. Learning, understanding, being able to see things, know things. So that you're not lost, you know, so that it's, I think the things we react most violently to are the things we don't understand. And when we don't understand something, we kind of want to get rid of it. We want to kill it. So that's why when new cultures come over, if they're wearing funny clothes, we tend to get rid of them. You know, we don't want to have them around. If they eat funny foods, we don't want to have them around. We want things we understand. With the recent, at the recent incident, where the Korean culture became in the spotlight because they saw this withdrawn young boy who had this reaction and burst out and killed a number of people. And, of course, everybody was upset by this. More upset also, the president of Korea actually had to apologize for the behaviors of someone as if there is no psychiatric problems among Korean people. As if you have to apologize. Oh, this was such an extraordinary thing, it would never ever happen again. But it's not just Korean. In the Harvard Medical Review, a recent study was done about China. And in China, they found, one of the things that they found, is that China has the lowest rate of depression of almost any culture in the world. Well, that's a funny thing, don't you think? So they did a closer look, but they saw in looking closely that the Chinese medicine has no concept of mood disorders. In fact, depressive symptoms are regarded as a derangement of the life force, the qi, often associated with the liver and the lung being out of whack. So if you go to your doctor and you say, oh, I feel like killing myself, they, you know, and simplistically I'm saying it, they say, let's take something for your lung. They do that in America too, except usually they light it up. Many Chinese regard sadness as a display of sadness, as shameful, and a sign of weakness. Now, we're going to find this a lot in the Asian community, that there's a separation between what seems to be mental illness is considered really shameful. Therefore, people can't talk about it. And I'm going to tell you about a number of different cultures today and how these cultures all have identified some unique psychiatric syndrome that's unique just to that culture. For example, in Japan, they found a new disorder, a disorder caused by an absence of genes mixed with a certain behavior. And this particular behavior is extreme gregariousness, indiscriminate friendliness, especially towards strangers. An unusual thing, right? I mean, but that you could assume that, but it's among children. And when the child has this unusual friendliness towards strangers, they think, oh, it's just a behavior disorder, right? No. They find that there's some genetic disorder. It's called Williams syndrome. And at least it would be suspicious to you. But you see, in Japan, people are reserved. So a child who is overly friendly would come to someone's attention. But if that child was unusually silent, he may not. Because that may be culturally okay. What do I know? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I want to tell you about some of the things that go on in different cultures. You would be surprised. There are culture-bound syndromes, one of which we know. Now, you never hear the expression running amok. He's running amok, A-M-O-K. Well, amok is a specific thing. It's a period of brooding followed by an outburst of violent, aggressive, homicidal behavior directed at people and objects. The episodes seem to be precipitated by a perceived insult or slight and seem to be prevalent among only males. Sound familiar? This is the syndrome they talked about. This is what they said this young boy went through. I'll read it to you again. A period of brooding followed by an outburst of violent, aggressive, and homicidal behavior called running amok. The episode is also accompanied by persecutory ideas, some amnesia, exhaustion, and the person may actually forget the entire thing after it took place, and it came from Malaysia. Malaysia, the word in neck, also very popular in Polynesia, Korea, Papua New Guinea, and Puerto Rico, and among the Navajo. Isn't this funny? Now we listen to this and we go, oops, running amok. I thought there was a psychiatric word for it. I thought we were looking about. But, you know, if you understand the cultures, you may be able to understand a little better. Here's another one for you. Bouffe delirant. I've seen this myself. A syndrome observed in West Africa and Haiti. This French term refers to a sudden outburst of aggressive behavior, more confusion, and excitement, not usually violence. These episodes represent like a brief psychotic disorder. The person has hallucinations. So the person, and here's another one for you, in West Africa, brain fag. Yeah, isn't that a beautiful thing? Brain fag is a term initially used in West Africa to refer to a condition experienced by high school or university students in response to the challenges of schooling. Symptoms include difficulties in concentrating, remembering, and thinking. Students also state that their brains are fatigued. And then going along with that, they have blurred vision, they have an inside pain in the neck, heat, burning. And resulting syndrome can result in anxiety, depressive, and somatoform disorders. So, I mean, doesn't this sound familiar? You know, we call it brain fag. You know, I can't work anymore. My poor brain can't work. But you see, in West Africa, if this takes place, it's part of a deeper syndrome. It's not just get some rest and you'll be better. One of my favorites. You're going to enjoy this. Let me see, where is this one? The one of not ghost sickness. Dahat. D-H-A-T. Do you suffer from Dahat? Well, you put it on the head. No, D-H-A-T. It's a post-diagnostic term used in India, probably pronounced Dat, right? To refer to severe, now this is going to be the funny one that we're going to start running to all over the place. Refer to severe anxiety and hypochondriacal concerns associated with the discharge of semen, whitish discoloration of the urine, and feelings of weakness and exhaustion. So this becomes in India, and we're going to find it also goes on to Sri Lanka and China, a similar syndrome. And this syndrome has to do with how much semen a man has spent. And if he spends more semen than other people, he might have that in China, in India. Now, in China, where is it? In Koro, is it? No, I'll get to the other ones. Good. Okay. Now, there's another one called ghost sickness. And this is the preoccupation with death and disease, and it's frequently observed among Native American tribes. Various symptoms include bad dreams, weakness, feelings of danger, loss of appetite, and a sense of suffocation. You see, now when you look at it, if you were a Native American psychiatrist, which is almost an oxymoron, right? If you're a Native American psychiatrist, you would say, you know, somebody would come over and they'd sit down and they'd say, hey, you know, I've got these feelings. I'm feeling I got this sense of suffocation, and I'm having these very bad dreams. You know, you might say that, well, that's ghost sickness. We know what that is. But if you're an American psychiatrist looking at somebody doing this, you're going to say, oh, I never heard of that. I'm going to give you medication to treat one or the other, and that we won't even pay attention to the suffocation. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind, bringing you things about psychology and psychiatry that I think are just fascinating. And it's just good for you to know about, you know? Because this world is getting to be a smaller place, much, much smaller. And the cultures are just getting closer and closer. And especially, my friends, the Chinese. We have to understand Chinese people. Our population is growing. Most of Manhattan is rapidly growing with the influx of Chinese people. Asian in general, but the Chinese specifically. And we don't understand the Chinese people, so what's going to happen? We're going to wind up separating our cultures, you know, separating them. We here and the Asians over there. And what does that do? That drives the Asian people into some kind of a seclusion. And that makes us feel angry because we're not part of them, you know. So we have to take a close look at this. In order to keep peace in this world, let us understand each other. Let me talk to you about Shen Kui. Shen Kui in China. A Chinese folk label. Now listen to this. Dizziness, backache, fatigability, some frequent dreams, insomnia, and some impotence. But here's what they believe. Symptoms like this are often associated to excess semen loss through frequent intercourse. They tell you too much intercourse, too much masturbation. Right? Excessive semen loss is feared because of the belief that you lose your vital essence and therefore you can endanger your life. So what do you do if you're a randy young kid, you know, who can't keep himself out of the bathroom like most young boys can't? You're shortening your life? Instead of saying, you know, hey, you're going to grow hair on your palms, we don't do that. You're going to have a shortened life. You should stop that. Susto, H-U-S-T-O, mostly among Latinos in the United States, also in Mexico. Susto is an illness attributed to a frightening event that causes the soul to leave the body and results in unhappiness and sickness. When you have susto, which is also called espanto, pasmo, tripa ida, perdida del alma, this illness may appear at any time, days or years after the fright. So if you went to a Latin American psychiatrist and you said, oh, I had this big fright, they would say, well, it's very possible that that's the reason your soul left your body, you see, and that's why you're so unhappy and depressed. So everybody sees it a little differently. And I'll tell you the truth. I don't think they're wrong. I don't think we're right. It's just different ways of looking at it. Look at your own behaviors and your own emotions. Do you understand yourself? Don't you think you're a little weird? Everybody thinks they're a little strange. Everybody wonders why they do one thing or another. Everybody says, you know, I know a guy who told me every time a scar is healing on his body, he can't stop from picking it off. Right? He can't. He can't stop himself. What is that? Well, it's called Falabubba. No, I just made that up. Okay, let's go back to the different cultures and what they have. Here's one called sangue dormido. Sangue dormido, my friend. Sleeping blood. The syndrome is found among the Portuguese, the Cape Verde Islanders. And it includes pain, numbness, tremor, paralysis, convulsions, but mostly miscarriage. Miscarriage. And so if somebody has a miscarriage and they're from Portugal or Cape Verde, they are said they have sangue dormido, sleeping blood, it's called. The sleeping blood. We're learning. Are any of you learning? Are you writing this down? We may have a little test a little later, but we're going to take your calls, too, and try to examine your syndrome. Here's another for you that comes from Ethiopia, Somalia, Egypt, Sudan, Iran, and other North African and Middle Eastern societies called ZAR, Z-A-R. What a nice t-shirt. Persons possessed by a spirit who become dissociative and they are seen laughing, shouting, and butting their head against the wall while they are singing and weeping. Well, that's pretty specific, right? You know, I mean, there you are in Africa, they usually refuse to eat, they usually have an apathy. But there they are, singing, eating, and banging their head against the wall, and laughing at the same time, and refusing to eat. And if you're an Ethiopian psychiatrist, you look at this person and you go, aha, czar. If you're an American psychiatrist, you look at it and you go, what's the matter with this guy? And you try to figure it out. See, but each culture has its own. I'm sure you find this interesting. Koro, K-O-R-O, Malaysian origin, refers to an episode of sudden and intense anxiety that the organs of the body, the penis, the vulva, the nipples, will recede into the body and possibly cause death. I've seen this. I had a patient who came in who had this feeling. The syndrome is reported in South and East Asia, where it is known by a number of different terms: Shukyang, Shukyang, Suyang, Jijinabema, and Rokju in Thailand. It's occasionally found in the West. Koro at times occurs in localized epidemic forms in Eastern Asian areas. This diagnosis is included in the Chinese classification of mental disorders. So there it is. You believe that your organs are shrinking back into your body. They're going backwards. And I have met a man. I remember a man came into me and he said, it's getting shorter. My penis is getting shorter and I know it's receding into my body. Do you think people are unusual? If we're all unusual, if anybody saw you in the privacy of your house, probably they would see something unusual that you do. Why do you clean up that kitchen counter so much? Right? Why are you always putting things in order? Why do you leave this mess around? What do you do in the bathroom that nobody sees? Do you know what I mean? Everybody's got their own idiosyncrasies. Some of those idiosyncrasies turn into real trouble, and most of them are just, what I said, idiosyncrasies. Let's go back to Malaysia, where they have LATAH, L-A-T-A-H, hypersensitivity to fright, echopraxia, often with echopraxia, echolalia, command obedience, dissociative endurance. The term LATAH is a synonym being found in many parts of the world. Okay, what it means, is you have an oversensitivity to noises, to sounds, so much so that you jump. You jump, you know, you get, don't do that, don't talk like that. And it happens frequently in women of middle age in that culture, in Malaysian culture. And then we have Malo de Ojo, O-J-O, which could be Oho. Mediterranean cultures, it's called the evil eye, Maho, Mal de Ojo. Spanish phrase, evil eye, children are especially at risk. Symptoms include fitful sleep, crying without apparent cause, diarrhea, vomiting, and fever in a child or infant. Sometimes adults have this condition, Mal de Ojo, right? The evil eye. You know, whatever happened to casting spells? Somebody I know recently was examining their family, and they looked at their family and they saw this most horrendous family history. The family seemed to be totally dysfunctional. Everywhere they looked in this family, there was dysfunction. And he kind of mentioned it to somebody passing by, and the friend, you know what the man said? He said, it's a curse. It's a curse on the family. You know, do you think we have such a thing? Do you think there is such a thing? Do you think somebody 200 years ago cursed his family and said, you know, I will get back at you. I will burn these branches and drip this blood from this cactus and put it all together and boil it, double toil and trouble. And when I get done with it, I'm going to take it and I'm going to throw it on your body. And therefore, you will always have a dysfunctional family. Sometimes it feels like that, you know. Doesn't it sometimes feel like somebody put a curse on you? I don't believe in curses. I don't believe in them. But, you know, a lot of things I didn't believe in once, I believe in now. Let's go to Qigong. Qigong psychotic reaction. This is a very common one, not recognized. Qigong. We know what Qigong is, right? The Chinese art folk health-enhancing practice of Qigong, which is one of the martial arts. Qigong is fabulous. Well, this happens. It is time-limited episode, which it comes distinctly related to the practice of Qigong. People who practice Qigong sometimes become psychotic. The very nature of the meditation induces this psychosis, and it's a short-acting psychosis, but it's called Qigong psychotic reaction. I wonder if they have that for the other martial arts, you know what I mean? Different kind of things. Well, I am sure, my friends, that you find this all interesting. And you may ask questions about yourself, but what I want to do today is I want to take your telephone calls. I want to take your telephone calls because it's going to be a long time since I could take your calls again. Next Wednesday or Tuesday, I will be on air with you. We're going to check that out in a minute. And I'll be with you from 1 to 3 p.m. And we're going to be doing a human sexuality presentation special, which should be pretty great. But during that time, we raise money for the station, and we try to get you to contribute as much as you can. Save up your dollars. Come join me during that period. I'll offer some premiums. But make your donations during that time. For the time being, though, I want to take this opportunity to speak to some of you, my friends, about what you've heard, about your reactions, about yourself. 212-209-2900 is the number. 212-209-2900. Let's take a couple of your calls. Hi there. 212-209-2900. We're going to queue you up in just a minute. So the other, just want to finish up with one more thing we're going to have here for you. I can't pronounce this. Piblokatag, I can pronounce it. Piblokatag is the individual may tear off his or her clothing, break for, oh, this is, I love this one. It's from the Eskimo community. You're in the Eskimo community and suddenly you have no reason, you're in your igloo or whatever protective place you're in, and you rip off all your clothing and you go running outside. And you perform dangerous acts out there. And it's called Piblokatag. And you know, somebody said, what's the matter with Tony? He's naked outside. Oh, he's got Piblokatag. If there is a Tony in Eskimo land. But, you know, if you need help with your Piblokatag, call us. Let's take a call. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand.
Yes.
That one about the fear of losing semen and so forth.
Isn't that amazing? That is very popular.
We have that problem here in this country.
We do.
At least I saw a movie about it some years ago. Maybe you saw it too. This guy was worried about losing his precious bodily fluids.
Sure. Sure.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do know what you're talking about.
I mean, the movie. You know which movie it is?
Yes, I do know what movie it is.
Okay.
And it is common. It's very common among a lot of people who have a lot of sexual guilt. You see, if you have a lot of problems around sex, as many people do, because when we're growing up, we have this kind of thing from the world, the adult world, telling us how bad sex is in so many different forms. So it makes a lot of sense that what you do is you convert that into some kind of a great fear. And I know a lot of people who practice different forms of tantric sex who believe that you lose sexual energy. You lose energy by having orgasm. It may or may not be true.
Wait, you do know that I'm talking about Dr. Strangelove.
Sure, I do.
Okay, okay. That's just sort of a joke. Just thought I'd contribute.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is it was more than a joke. Because when he was talking about it, he was talking about it from a crazy point of view. By the way, did you see the recent Peter Sellers movie?
No.
Oh, the life.
He's dead, isn't he?
The Life and Death of Peter Sellers. I strongly recommend it.
Okay.
Okay, it's available on, you know, rental or something like
Netflix.
That. Yeah, you got it. So thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. 212-209-2900. See, that's what happens to me. I take things, jokes sometimes seriously. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Yes, Mr. Armand Dembele. How are you doing?
Good.
Mr. Dembele, I've been listening to you for so many years, and thank God I get through now. And I am a guy with so many problems. First of all, I was raped when I was a kid. And I'm right now 45 years old, and I never went to therapy, and I was trying for so many years to cope with my problems emotionally and physically, and I'm trying to forget what really happened to me in the past, but something is happening in my brain. I can't deal with these problems.
Where are you from originally?
Excuse me, sir?
Where are you from originally? I hear an accent.
Yes, I am from Peru.
Peru, huh?
Yes.
And what are the symptoms that you're having? Are you depressed, or do you feel nervous, or do you feel...
Yes, I am very depressed. I feel nervous. I have anxiety. I can't sleep at night, you know. And Yes.
Do you keep reliving the past?
Yes, sir. I keep living in the past, and I remember constantly what happened to me when I was a kid. And I try everything, you know. I'm trying to go to the gym. I'm trying to listen to music. I'm trying to relax.
I understand, you know, and that's what most people do. Why didn't you seek out help for it? Were you ashamed?
Well, see, what happened when this happened, I was in my country, and my parents, they never helped me to take care of this problem, never. So later I came to this country, and I've been in this country for 25 years. And believe it or not, I don't know why, probably fear or I tried to get help, but I couldn't, you know. And
all right, so you get in touch with me, and I'll find you the help you need. Because I'll tell you the truth, you know, when something like this happens and you have a major incident that seems to be at the foundation of most of the depression that you feel, sometimes just finding somebody who could understand, listen, it makes the symptoms go away and you can start your life.
All right.
So, what's your name?
I would like not to tell my name. Because
okay, don't tell your name, but when you call, just say the man from Peru.
Okay,
and I'll find you what I can.
What's the phone number?
You can call me at 212-757-4488.
4488. All right, Mr. Dubiel. Thank you. Thank you very much, okay?
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, that's what I mean, my friends. You know, that's exactly the story. That's what happens to people. People have things go on, and through a combination of shame, cultural things, you know, they live with it for so many years, and you hope it's going to go away. So somebody says, let's drain your blood, and somebody else says, let's shake chicken feathers over you, and somebody else says, go to the gymnasium. All right, well, maybe they may work. Change your diet. Maybe it works. But if it doesn't work, we suddenly have a field that is beautiful. In psychiatry and psychology, there's a way of understanding things that we haven't been able to understand before. Like this Williams syndrome. We would have never understood one in Japan. We would never understand how this, how it now matches with missing genetic structures. Science has gotten so good at this that we can not only see psychological stuff, but the combination of the psychological and the physical. You never know which one comes first. Is it the physical that comes first or the psychological that comes first? Is it a physical problem that yields, like if you have a tumor on your brain, do you suddenly get crazy? Or do you have the craziness in your brain that puts so much stress in you that you create a tumor? You never know which, but now we look for both. We never look for just one. And it's something that I say to all of you, you know, find the help. Don't live with unhappiness. It really, most of the times, we could do something about it. All right, all you jazz aficionados out there, you jazz fans, who is this playing this piano? Who do you think? From the beautiful album called After Hours with Dizzy Gillespie and Sonny Rollins and Sonny Stitt on it also. A fabulous combination of talent. But the piano player, I was hunting it up and I said, who is this familiar person? Because I remember when I was a kid, this is somebody who I sat in front of. And it turns out to be Ray Bryant. Those of you who are jazz people know Ray Bryant, who's just this quiet, subdued magician on the piano. Look up Ray Bryant, my friends. Kind of listen to some of his music. I think you'll really enjoy it. This is Armand DeMille with you with A Positive Mind, talking about things, talking about mental impact and the way things work. Now, I will not be on air on Tuesday. I will be with you Wednesday from 11 to 1 and then Thursday from 11 to 2. Unusual times, but Wednesday is going to be 11 to 1. Be sure to tune in. I'm going to do a human sexuality thing that I think you're going to get a kick out of. So, what's going on? 212-209-2900. What you think is something about you that is odd and is unusual is really understandable. Makes a lot of sense. Let's take your calls. 212-209-2900. I'll take another call right now. Thank you, Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Armand.
Yes. You're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, I could hear you.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me, but I could hear you.
Oh, okay. I actually have a quick question for you.
Sure.
You're talking about things that have an impact on people, and my question is, I know that as humans, we have a tendency for self-pity, which colors the way we react. Do animals feel self-pity?
You know, that was an interesting thing, Why Elephants Weep. Do you remember that book?
Yeah.
And it was.
I heard you speak about it.
Yeah, it's like a kind of curious thing. Self-pity. What does that word mean? Does it mean, let's say that you're a gazelle, and your baby gazelle dies, and they take your baby gazelle away. Now when if you grieve, do you grieve for your baby gazelle? Do you move right on? Do you feel bad because you lost your gazelle? What if you're one of those Eskimos, you know, who carry the egg, and you spend this, the penguins who carry the egg.
The penguins, right.
And you carry this egg, and then suddenly your egg didn't work. You know,
right.
You carried it for a year and it didn't work. What happens? You get depressed. Well,
right.
They see depression among animals and they see depressed animals, but self-pity is a funny word. It means you look at yourself and you say, poor me. Now, let me ask you something about you.
Go ahead. Let me just clarify one quick thing,
sure.
Then I'll answer your question. I was looking at it from that point of view, not self-pity in the sense where, more specifically, like, of course, to grieve and to have things happen to you is one thing, but to look at something from a point of self-pity and allow it to stop you, you know, I'm not saying I don't. I think that's normal also, but to what length is it where we do it to ourselves and we're our own worst enemy, sort of?
See, it sounds to me like you're in love with somebody who does this.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I'm in love with a lot of people.
Yeah, but it sounds like there's somebody who's driving you crazy.
No, not really. I'm in a wonderful relationship, and you know, nothing's perfect, but it's a beautiful, loving relationship, so I'm very happy with that.
Is there a lot of self-pity in that relationship?
No, it's just that I find, you know, I like to try to look at things from a bigger perspective, and I find that it helps me when I look at things from a larger picture
to deal with daily
stuff.
One of the things I want to help you with is I'm going to show you that there are certain words that are pejorative. Pejorative meaning that it's a kind of criticism. Automatically, self-pity means you shouldn't do it. Just by the very word. So if you were to say a person lives in great remorse, or a person lives with great regrets, or a person focuses on their unfortunate circumstances, it's a little kinder. Now, if you would, since you know somebody who does this a lot, give me an example of the kind of self-pity that this person goes through that stops them from going ahead in life.
Well, I'll give you my own. I don't have to speak about anybody else. For
example, I don't know how we wound up there. Okay, yes.
Yeah, like, for example, in the past, I'm good now, but in the past, when I had a relationship that didn't work, a marriage that was almost 10 years, and when it ended, I suffered, and I find that normal. But I've learned to move on, you know. And it took me about a year to move on, but I can see how that excessive self-pity held me back during that year.
Well, why do you call it self-pity? How about you were depressed? How about you were grieving?
That's fine. Call it whatever you want.
But it's a big difference. You see, one of the ways that people kick themselves. Because feelings are kind of interesting. Talk about animals for a minute. You know, an elephant has another elephant die. They look at the elephant. They nudge it. Supposedly, they weep. They have a moment of it. And then they move on. They don't have much to do with it. It's not like, you know, oh, I remember Joe the elephant. You know, I wish Joe were here. They may wish it. I heard about two elephants that were separated from childhood. That seemed to be depressed elephants, and they were reunited after 14 years. 14 years old, they got these two elephants that were separated in childhood, not brother and sister, just happened to be around the same neighborhood. And they found these two, and the two of them practically broke their cages to get at each other, and they were inseparable ever since.
Wow.
Now, they talk about memories of an elephant, you know what I mean?
Right.
So what we're saying is that there's very things that people go through. And a lot of things that we don't want to allow ourselves to have these emotional reactions. Think about the Asian community and their judgment about emotional frailty that we've been reading about. They don't want to allow it. They say this is not everybody. I don't want to make it like they say it. But it's like if you have a society that says you're not allowed to have emotional disturbance, if you're depressed, you're weak. If you have that, then they tell you you are self-pity.
Right.
I think people should be allowed to go through their feelings. I think it happens a lot faster. I think grieving is great. I think having a relationship and then not having another solid relationship for a year is a great thing. I think it pays homage to the time you spent together, and it prepares you for your future as well. And I think you had to go through that because it made you a better person.
Yeah, and you learn from that.
You do learn from it. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Hello there.
Hello there, doctor.
Hi there.
How you doing? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
I was driving through North Jersey, and I was listening to a CD when all of a sudden my finger hit one of the buttons on the steering wheel, and I'm now listening to your show.
How do you like that?
And your voice was so mesmerizing, it really intrigued me. And I sat there listening to what you had to say, and I was very fascinated by it. And I've lost your signal since then, so I can't even listen to your show anymore. But I figured it's worth waiting on hold just to share with you that I found what you were saying is very interesting. And I'm just wondering, why is it that the medical field feels that they need to put labels or identify or classify all these types of syndromes or illnesses? Does it really make for a faster cure for a patient?
It's a good question, Bob, but what it does is it helps identify information. So if I wanted to look up, for example, like why put a name of depression on a mood? because I want to gather information about depression from all over the world. So all of these phrases, all of these diagnoses, the words that we put to things, gives us a way of communicating with each other among the professionals, and it gives you a way of finding more research, if that's the way you use it. So it's not just we're putting a label on things. Did anybody ever put a label on you? Did they tell you that you were manic depressive?
Yeah, my wife puts lots of labels on me. Every day I got some new label put on me, but you know, it doesn't help to
what
cure
label,
that.
What well, your wife putting a label on you is different, unless
right.
she's afraid you're going to get lost and she's just writing your name and address in the back
well,
of your column.
Scientifically or medically, no, I have not really been identified or labeled as having any kind of...
What does your wife say you are? What does she say is wrong with you?
I'm crazy. I'm anal.
Because you're too retentive and you hold things
yes.
and you're a little too neat and she's angry with you.
Exactly.
So your wife is angry with you because she wants you to give her something that you don't feel is natural for you to give her right now, and you're holding back, right? And you would love to be able to give her more freely. But
not necessarily, no. But going aside from me in the relationship, though, in the scientific or medical fields, putting these labels on conditions that people have. I realize it helps to identify it so that you can build a history or a database that these particular types of conditions
right.
or,
that truly
or
helps.
Symptoms.
Bob, let me ask you. Would you call the condition you have towards your wife, would you say you're angry at her?
Not at all.
Not at all,
she's
right?
More, no, because she's more angry at me. I'm just very laid
well, that's
back.
That's the thing I'm asking you. If your wife is angry at you, how does that feel? You know, it's not a happy life.
She gets over it, and we get past it.
You do
and,
get
and
past it.
And then we expend, we have multiple orgasms and expend lots of semen, so I feel rejuvenated as the shape.
And you don't feel like you're dying. God bless you.
Not man. At all. I
hey,
mean,
Bob, WBAI is the radio station 99.5. QAnon is one of your special programs. But if you'd like to hear a lot of these other programs that I've done in the past, you could go to thepositivemind.com, and you have all the archives and all the shows that I've done, and you could listen to it on the Internet.
You're out of the New York area, right?
I'm in the New York area.
Yeah, that's why I can't pick you up down here in Central Jersey.
Well
very
people,
interesting.
A lot of people in Central Jersey do get us. We do get down there as well.
I'm not getting it on Route 80 right now. So,
no, but we avoid Route 80.
Oh, yeah,
we
right.
We have Route 80 phobia. And
there's another syndrome that you can identify there, right?
You're going to make it up, right, with the
right, exactly.
Syndrome.
Well, nice talking to you, Doctor. And
nice
I'll,
talking to you, Bob. Thanks for calling
in.
Tune in to WBAI. Tune
Will
in
do.
On Wednesday if you can. You want to hear about sex? Oh, we have so much to teach.
All right, very good. I got lots to learn, too, at 54 years of age.
You're a young boy. Thank you.
That's exactly right, Doctor. Thanks a lot. So long now.
I love when we get new people. You know, sometimes we get new people by the music we play. And so I'm playing music, and somebody just says, wow, what fabulous music. And then they slide into this self-awareness, consciousness-raising psychology show. And it's such like a moment of hypnotism, you know. And then they stay with WBAI forever, because what's better than BAI? You know, what's better? He is the best radio in the world. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I'm trying to reach the Armand DeMille show.
You have the Armand DeMille
show. Oh, I'm shy. It sounded different. Okay, I'm interested in finding an African-American psychoanalyst.
I got one.
Okay.
Why a psychoanalyst?
Well, I'm taking a master's program. You know, I'm going through that right now, and I need a therapist to finish the program. I'm African American.
Okay, so an analyst is not you just using the word analyst, meaning somebody who practices psychology.
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Because analysts are very specific. You know, when you said somebody's an analyst, it means they do a very specific thing that's a Freudian model of psychology.
Yeah, but, yeah, right.
But if we're going to do, if we're going to get you a Freudian, a black psychologist, African-American psychologist, we could find you one. And I know Suzanne Ross mentioned somebody to me who is great.
Okay.
So you could call Suzanne Ross.
I know Suzanne Ross.
Oh, well,
call her. Okay, give me the number just in case.
212-757-4488. How do you know her?
She taught me. I was a student of hers at Lehman.
What a fabulous thing. What do you think of her?
She's a very nice person.
Isn't she an amazing person?
Yeah.
We've been working together for a while, and she's just amazing. So, Bob, feel free to call. No, it's not Bob. I'm sorry. What's your name?
John.
John, thanks for calling in, and we will find you somebody.
Okay, I can't say that again. The number?
212-757-4488.
Thank you very much, sir.
Sure. Bye-bye. Yes, Suzanne Ross. What a nice thing. Imagine. She was my teacher. Maybe he said Susan Ross. I hope he didn't confuse the two. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there. So this is Armand DeMille with you. It's a bother of mine. You see, things happen, my friends, and you have all these different things that happen that make you get confused. There are things called sexual identity crisis disorders, you know. It is confusing, you know. Sometimes you don't know, you know. Sometimes you have just a nonconformity to stereotypical sexual role behaviors. And it's like you have these desires to be other than the way you are sexually. And you get very confused. And the confusions around sex probably, I would say, account for, I'm guessing, about 60% of most disorders. Starts early on, you know, and then confusion about it. It turns into something and turns into something else. And you believe you're shameful and you believe you're wrong and you believe you're bad. And you take it on with such a toll. And it just you're in this private world because you believe that there's nobody you can talk to about it. That's what happens. And staying in that place just leads to a kind of depression and a reclusiveness. And that's what we want to help you with. 212-209-2900. Is there another call there, Michael? Hi. Good. Let's take that call. Hi there. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Hi. How are you doing? I was wondering what you thought of psychiatric drugs like Zoloft and Lexapro. And you know, there have been a lot of cases where, you know, the Columbine shooters and various young men were taking these drugs and they became violent, and I was prescribed these types of drugs, but I'm a little bit wary of taking them, and I'm thinking about taking St. John's wort instead, and I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on it, you know. Let's start off with St. John's wort. St. John's wort is a potent drug. People think of it as, well, it's only an herb, so it can't hurt you. St. John's wort is so potent that if you take it with certain other chemicals, it could kill you.
Right.
It is a chemical that is helpful, but it's like trying to think of some of the other Chinese herbs that you can't take mixed with anything else, because it is, I mean, that's what herbs and drugs, they're still chemicals.
Right.
When you take something, you take something. Now, but I'm going to say, if you could get away with taking an herb versus anything else, sure, I go with that 100%. Straighten up your diet, go with St. John's wort. Obviously, you've got some depression.
Right.
But now, in the psychiatric drugs, I am always opposed to medication.
That's my skepticism also, because I've done a lot of reading on the subject, and apparently a lot of these pharmaceutical companies, they don't tell you about a lot of these serious effects.
Yeah. Absolutely, including, you know, when you get something like Zoloft or something, you suddenly get this sexual dysfunction that comes along with it, which you don't understand. But then they have this other drug you could take that doesn't have that with it. Yet I am very close to a psychiatrist. If you look at my website, you'll see there's a psychiatrist there who I trust.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where these drugs have worked the best, psychiatric drugs like Zoloft and the other SSRIs they're called, is with obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Mm-hmm.
When a person has an obsessive-compulsive disorder, it's driving them crazy. And the craziness of it, the rapidity, the speed with which the psychiatric SSRIs work to help relieve that is much faster than anything I know therapeutically or in any other way. So if you get to that point, I think with that, it's real helpful. Depression, I think, is liftable through nutrition and I think through psychotherapy. But if the depression...
You think I should go with the St. John's wort then? I mean,
I don't know. I think you should have a good interview with somebody.
Right.
Who can look at you and evaluate it and tell you what they think. You know, of course, if you get interviewed with a psychiatrist, he's going to...
They always want to push drugs. That's it. That all they do is, you know, they give you a prescription. That's it, you know.
Yeah,
and
no,
I felt
not
like,
all of us. Not all of
not
us.
Not all. No, I shouldn't say that.
But
I mean, I
will recommend somebody
is,
to medication sometimes. I'll
right.
tell them, go see Kent Robert Shaw, because I know he's going to give you the minimal medication to help you get through this hump, especially when people can't afford it. When
right.
people can't afford treatment, they can't afford a minimum amount of money. They can't afford to pay $30, which is what all the clinics in New York charges their minimum if you're going to see a student. If you can't afford $30, well, it's very likely that if you go to take a medication, at least it'll keep you out of the, you know, off the ground for a short period of time till
right.
you could work enough to earn enough money to go to get some kind of a treatment that would actually help you solve the problem.
Okay.
So we're in agreement.
Right,
but
right.
it's not all bad. It's not,
not all bad. No.
And the
no.
best, I think, the best task with all medications is to take a medication for a short period of time with the goal of doing away with it.
And well, they always say at least 6 months. I mean, to me, 6 months is a long time.
Not necessarily.
You know,
I don't.
They
think
say at least, and then they say, well, maybe a year, and
well,
then you have to let her on.
We're talking
on
about
for
different days.
Right.
You know, who the day is.
Well, I'm saying psychiatry in general, the psychiatrists I've talked to and what are the reading I've done on the subject, I'd say the consensus is, if you ask, they say, well, you need to stay on most SSRIs for at least 6 months.
Seem to have done a lot of research. Maybe it's true. But I tell you, you should find one person who is not convinced one way or another of what you should be doing, and then go to that person and say, consult with me, tell me what you think. Because anything you try, like I said, just try it with some kind of consciousness, give it a shot, see how you feel. I don't want you to be unhappy, you know?
That's not, like, doesn't have his mind made up? That
yeah,
I could...
sure. Like almost everybody I know does not have their mind made up.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for calling in. This is Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. We're just about out of time. I want to thank all of you for calling in. I'll be back with you on Wednesday at 1 p.m. for our two-hour special, my friends. Yep, we're going to be there. And if you want to get in touch with us, you go to thepositivemind.com and you'll hear our, you'll see our website and take a look through, you know. Or you can go to WBAI.org and listen to replays of today's program. Bye-bye for now, my friends.